Northwest Arkansas residents gathered to honor the life of a woman killed by immigration and customs enforcement. A new museum tells the story of Arkansas's first school desegregation, and artists from across the natural state are celebrated for their work. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Protests sprung up across the U.S. last weekend against the use of the federal government's Immigration and Customs Enforcement after Renee Good, a 37-year-old mother of three, was shot and killed by an ICE agent in Minneapolis. Dozens of people gathered for a vigil in Springdale on Friday to remember Good and the more than 30 others who have died in ICE custody over the last year. KUAF's Daniel Carruth has more.
Despite frequent honks and cheers from passing drivers, it's a somber mood among the crowd of demonstrators in Springdale's Cherry Park on the corner of Emma Avenue and Thompson Street. People hold signs denouncing immigration and customs enforcement agents and light small red candles and plastic cups to honor the lives of those who've died while being detained by ICE. The event was organized by Alliance for Immigrant Respect and Education, or AIRE. Irvin Camacho is one of the group's co-founders and a Springdale native.
I feel like the community is grieving a lot, and there's a lot of sadness, and there's a lot of like lack of community. So having a vigil like this today allows people to come, you know, grieve, like let out their frustrations and just kind of be in community. So that's why we thought it was important for us to organize this event here today.
He says Northwest Arkansas has become a high-traffic area for ICE arrests. Data from the University of California Berkeley Deportation Project shows that more than 450 people were arrested by ICE at the Benton County Jail alone from January 1st to October 15th in 2025. That's nearly two arrests per day in a county with roughly 300,000 people. And Camacho says the ramp-up of enforcement in this community has led to the arrest of people with misdemeanor charges or sometimes no criminal record at all.
People in the community are reporting ICE activity in Northwest Arkansas, so it's like more visible than ever. And then what's also very visible is that people are being deported who have no criminal history. They're only like misdemeanors being in this country, you know, illegally. So I think that's coming, it's in a broader view than it ever has been before. And then, you know, senseless murders like what happened with Miss Renee, like that also, you know, like tugs at people's hearts and makes people upset.
Most of those arrests in Northwest Arkansas are made under 287G agreements, which is named for a section of immigration law that allows deputies to question people who are booked into the jail about their immigration status and then alert ICE officials. Last year, the Arkansas Department of Corrections signed a 287G agreement, offering federal payments for training, equipment, and even salaries for some agents. ICE now has 1,180 cooperation agreements with state and local law enforcement in Arkansas. There were just 130 of these types of agreements in January of last year. And Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders has also signed a law that would require all county sheriffs to work with ICE. On the sidewalk, Karina Velasquez is lighting two candles and passing them out to fellow protesters. The Lowell resident says the increased policing of specifically Hispanic immigrants has many people, even those with legal status, scared.
We have. I've heard of a lot of people that we know get picked up by ICE. And I can say that most of them were going to work or coming from work, and they don't come home anymore. They don't see their kids, and that's not right. And I think Northwest Arkansas is a community that needs to wake up. that needs to get out of their shell and meet thy neighbor and start learning how to love thy neighbor. People that are okay with what's going on, it's very inhumane. And if you don't put yourself in another person's shoes, you're never going to understand it. And you can't just continue to keep attacking brown people or people that don't look like you because you are threatened because all these people are working or doing what they have to do. These people come to work. Here's my husband, just got off work. He's also an immigrant. He is now a U.S. citizen, and there's no right way to do it. So,
on the other side of the crowd is Fayetteville resident Emily Lawson. She joined the vigil tonight with her husband Ethan and daughter Genevieve and says it's up to people who are not directly impacted by this to show up and speak up.
You know, there's just so much going on. I feel helpless a lot of times seeing everything happening in the world that I just, this feels like something I can do and I want to be present for it, you know. She's the next generation. You know, I think it's important to instill these values, moral reason. It's just, it's the right thing to do. We want to be a good example for that, for her future.
And Camacho says the immigration crackdown has also had an economic impact on the region, with local businesses reporting less traffic as people are afraid to leave their homes for fear of getting picked up by ICE.
Supposedly, they were supposed to be here to take, you know, the most dangerous people in the country, but they're taking moms and dads who have no criminal charges, folks that are just working, that are trying to get to their job, that are trying to go pick up their kids from school. People are being racially profiled. We have video of that. It's on our social media of people being racially profiled and being called illegal aliens when they're U.S. citizens. So what we want to see is ICE out of our communities, but we also want to see a pathway to residency and citizenship. We've been asking for that for years, and there's been a lot of empty promises, and you know, I feel like people just don't want to legalize folks. I mean, these folks are already contributing not only as humans, which is the most important thing, but economically to our state, to our country. They pay taxes. You know, even if you're undocumented, you still pay taxes.
After remarks and calls to action from a few IRA organizers, the vigil concluded with a performance from the Springdale-based group Trio Hermanitas Alvarez.
That was KUAF's Daniel Carruth reporting. A new museum in Northeast Arkansas tells the sometimes forgotten story of the state's first school desegregation. Hoxie, the First Stand, is a new museum in the town of Hoxie, which documents the integration of that school district in 1955, 2 years prior to Little Rock Central High School. KASU's Marty Scarborough spoke with the museum's board president, Ethel Tompkins, to learn more.
For someone who doesn't know the details of the story behind the integration of Hoxie schools, would you please tell us that little bit of Arkansas history?
Shortly after the Brown v. Board of Education that the Supreme Court heard, the case that they heard, and when they made the decision that separate but equal in the school system was not a viable thing to be doing. Because usually the African American schools got, you know, left, you know, as far as funding goes. So shortly after that decision was made, three schools in Arkansas decided to integrate right away. Two of them in, say, North Arkansas, they were Charleston and Fayetteville. They integrated theirs rather quietly. However, when the Hoxie School Board decided to do their integration, everything went smoothly until Life Magazine came along and did a pictorial history of the integration, showing that the kids were doing, you know, we were getting along peacefully, played together, you know, in the beginning, everything was fine. About a week after that magazine went on the stands, several anti-integration groups, the White Citizens Council and a couple of others, got together and decided that they would come to Hoxie to disrupt the integration process. So that was the beginning of the little bit of dissension that we had. Now, the citizens generally went, had no concerns about the integration. But when the groups came in, they started passing the flyers and things telling the people that they should not be integrating the schools, that biblically black and white students should not be getting an education together, that it was against Arkansas statutes, just various things to plant the seed into the citizens' mind that this was not a good thing. So some of the citizens signed a petition to remove the school board. They also visited various families to try to convince them that it was not good to have the students go to school together, and that they should hold their students out of school. So that started a small boycott, well, small for us since we're a small town, to remove the students and to shut down the school. Well, since we were on the split term, the first term was almost getting ready to end. So the school board decided to go ahead and shut it down 2 weeks early. And then after that, with the harassment that the school board was getting and some of the other families were getting harassed, so the school board told the group, okay, let's go to court and see about why you believe this is against the law. This abbreviated version, a lot went on between that, but that's just some of the basics of it. I could go on forever. But when they went to court, the different courts that they went to sided on the side of the school board. Now, a lot of the one thing that a lot of people don't know or don't realize that the decision that the Arkansas Supreme Court made, those decisions are being used even today, even from 1955 until the present day. Every once in a while, a decision in the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, and other courts will reference the Hoxie decision that the court made as part of their suits that they have. So even though this has been 70 years ago, they are still using our decision. So that puts us in history, a lot of history that nobody knows about. And so also the way we got our name, Hoxie the First Dead, is that the Hoxie integration was the very first to stand against the opposition. Also, we were the first to get the federal government involved. Up until Hoxie, the federal government was not involved in enforcing the Supreme Court decision. But when we had ours, several attorneys and board members requested the intervention from the federal government, stating that this is a federal law. So you need to help us enforce that, because that's all we're doing. We're trying to enforce the federal decision, and we're getting harassed, and so we need need help in that. So that's why we were the first to stand against opposition, and that's how we got our name.
That was Ethel Tompkins, board president of Hoxie, the First Stand, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. The museum will host a grand opening event on Saturday, January 24th, and you can hear the full interview online at kasu.org. Sixteen artists from across Arkansas will be honored in an upcoming award ceremony. The Arkansas Arts Council is celebrating 40 years of its Individual Artist Fellowship Awards program. Artists from across the state will receive a $5,000 grant as part of this year's class of inductees. I spoke with Brazier Watts, the council's interim director, about what to expect.
This year, it is very significant because this program has been going on quite a while to help individuals, some of them to be exposed in different areas for their creativity, for their discipline. It's been happening to afford them an opportunity to make connections, to help to not only inform the public about their abilities as an artist, but also to help them to advance as artists. Arkansas has a huge, huge, huge base of artists, great artists. We have renowned artists from the state of Arkansas, as I'm sure you all know. And so enabling not only the existing artists that need the exposure, but also new artists that need exposure to have an opportunity to receive this type of celebration and award for what they do in the state.
What kind of artists are you looking for to take part in the Individual Artist Fellowship program?
So over the years, we've had different categories. Every year, some of the categories change. This year specifically, we had performing artists. So we had dance choreography focus, literary arts focus, which was poetry, contemporary craft, which was our wood component this year, visual arts, which was a public art component, community engagement art, and then multi-sensory works this year. And every year it has been, some of those categories have changed during the different years as to what we're specifically looking for.
And who are some of the artists that really stuck out to you that are being honored this year?
Well, this year, in our performing artists category, we have Amy Brentlett Turner of Hot Springs. In our poetry category, Elizabeth Mascari of Fayetteville, Tori Sharp of Little Rock, Jeffrey Brock of Fayetteville. In our contemporary craft, we have Andrew Blackwell of Fayetteville, Andrew Myers of Bryant, Sandra Sale of Little Rock. Visual arts, we have Joel Boyd of Little Rock, Gina Rose Galena of Fayetteville, Jose Hernandez of North Little Rock. Our community engagement artists are Chuck Davis of Rogers, Tram Caldwin of Salem Springs, Khalid Sawaf of Fayetteville. And then our multi-sensory works this year, Jean Schmidt of Fayetteville, Desmond Mary of Little Rock, and Serena Caffrey of Fayetteville.
What can you tell our listeners about the event? What can we expect from that?
Well, we are so excited for this event this year, not only that because it's a 40th celebration, but also, as you said, it's honoring those 16 fellowship awardees. But we have a great opportunity to have it at a great facility. Mosaic Templars Culture Center, our sister agency, has given us an opportunity. Their director there, Keith Fletcher, for us to come in and have the event there. Those of you that may have been there know that it is a great venue. They have their own exhibits there. And just the building is just historically beautiful. And so we are very excited to have the event there. The event will be held on February 5th from 5 to 8 p.m. At the Temple at Mosaic Temple Cultural Center. And we consider this event, which it has been years in the years past, as an immersive opportunity for individuals to just be immersed in the arts. There will be several rooms there that will afford individuals an opportunity to experience certain disciplines in different rooms. So as you come in, there'll be a room in which poetry recitation will be happening. There will be a room where an actual live painting exhibition will go on. There will be a music a room that will have people who are interested in music will be able to go and experience music in one room. And so there will be film also. Let me remember that also, that there will be a room where short film exhibits will take place. So we hope that people will come in. Of course, there will be food. Let me say that because people want to know if there will be food. Yes, there will be plenty of food. And so we just want people to come in and just experience the arts, just multifaceted experience of the arts. And we want them to be introduced to artists that they may not know or be aware of in the state that are doing great things. I specifically have been saying that I really would love for us to have more young people come out this year because we really want young people to get an understanding and to see that the arts can be a viable a viable career choice for them. And we want them to meet artists who have made this a viable career choice. And may be able to share their experience with younger people of how that happened for them, how have they been successful in the arts, and not only working in the arts, but also some of them have their own businesses pertaining to their arts, so their art field. So I really want young people to be able to see and connect. And to have that experience.
All right, last question for you today. As we you are here on the 40th anniversary of this program, I guess what do you hope for the next 40 years of the program?
Well, actually, the next 4 years, I won't be around, but here, but actually, we are considering. I'm sure some of you know the situation that we have right now with the arts period is that arts funding has become extremely sparse in the state of Arkansas, but not only in the state of Arkansas, but nationwide. And so we are hoping to actually kind of reinvent this funding stream to kind of push artists out there to connect with organizations in their communities. We really want to focus this funding and use this funding to provide more arts for more people. So instead of just giving funding to individual artists with no parameters, we're really hoping to kind of steer this program into artists connecting with organizations in their communities and actually bringing arts projects initiated by them, projects and programs that will affect more people in their community. Our biggest grant funding program, our most popular grant funding program, is our Community Arts Project grant. And we don't have enough funding to answer the call of so many organizations that need this funding. So we're hoping to kind of reinvent this in a way that it connects artists to organizations in their communities. So that the funding, as I said, can reach more people.
That was Brazier Watts, Interim Director of the Arkansas Arts Council. The 40th Annual Individual Artist Fellowship Awards Program is set for February 5th at the Mosaic Templars Cultural Center in downtown Little Rock. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.